Welcome to TW Now. I'm Scott Winnell. Parenting and grandparenting are each a responsibility and a privilege. These roles are arguably two of the most important a person will ever fill, with the power to positively or negatively impact future generations. Yet sadly, it seems much of our modern society is undermining our ability to parent or grandparent well. What can parents and grandparents do in order to be highly successful and truly great parents or grandparents? Are there keys or actions that can be taken to ensure success in a world that is bent on destroying the very roles that have been the undergirding of strong and successful societies for millennia? Today on TW Now, we'll talk about these keys, and to guide our discussion, we have with us two returning guests. Mr. Jonathan McNair, welcome to you, sir. It's good to have you back. Mr. McNair is a father of five adult children. He's a teacher and a writer who has spent much of his career teaching about godly parenting. Mr. McNair is also an experienced minister and church pastor. Dr. Richard Franz joins us from St. Louis via Skype today. He is a father and a grandfather. He's a pastor and a teacher who has also focused a great deal of his ministry teaching about marriage and family issues. So again, gentlemen, great to have you back with us. And thank you for being here and for being willing to share some of your experiences and what you have learned. By the way, before we get started, I would like to encourage you, if you've got questions or you want some more answers, please message us. Also, remember to like or share today's program, please. All right, let's go ahead and get started, gentlemen. Question number one for you as we launch into this discussion is, what are some of the challenges faced by parents and grandparents in society today? And Dr. Franz, let's go ahead and start with you.
There are a number of challenges that we could address, but I'll just focus on one. And we are in the computer age, and computers are getting smaller and more handy. And youth are being brought up now. My granddaughter just turned a year old, and she's going to grow up in a society that electronics is just part of the way of life for her. It keeps kids inside. It's not that in itself is bad, but it keeps kids inside. They don't go out and play. They don't build snow forts. They're not playing King of the Hill, kick the can, or playing down at the schoolyard in a choose-up game of baseball where they'll experience rejection. They'll experience leadership and followership. So they miss out on that interaction. And it really it's a challenge for parents because they might not be home because of work. So they might rely on these things a little bit more than we should, but it's a challenge. How do we overcome that?
Okay. Yeah. Interesting point to start with. The challenge of technology is not something, as you pointed out, that we have had to deal with as much in years past, and yet it is so real and right in front of us today, both for kids and for adults, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And it's not getting easier. It's getting more difficult. It's getting more convenient. Doing research for the program today, parents were discussing on how they were addicted to their phone, even from the parent's standpoint, giving their child a bath while they were swiping their screen and looking at their cell phone. It's just out of balance. I don't know that the society at large hasn't lost touch with what was the priority when I had this child, and what should it be today?
Okay.
Yeah. No, that, as you said, that's certainly true with parents as well as children, and children get their example from parents. Electronics is a huge issue. There are so many different areas. When you think about time, I mean, just think about the crush. It seems like everyone is crushed for time, crunched for time. And so you have that. It seems like financially, it's harder and harder to raise a family, and the challenges. Think about what college costs now and schooling. I mean, so that's a huge area. I think about concern for their safety in schools or on the streets and whatever they do. You know, one of the reasons that I know with my kids that I want them to have a phone is when they're, you know, they're out and about, if they're traveling somewhere, that they have a means to contact someone, myself or whoever, and for help. So, you know, safety and security is a challenge with our kids, and yet, of course, there are problems that go along with the electronics. But it seems like there's an endless list. I think fundamentally the biggest challenge that the underscores is really the way we don't value family as much. To me, that's there are a lot of ramifications of it, but it's fundamentally we do not value, I would claim, family as much as we should.
What? And don't you think that's an offshoot? I'm sorry.
No,
you think that's an offshoot, Mr. McNair, what you just said? I totally agree. It's an offshoot of society moving away from a relationship with God our Father. So our whole value system begins to crumble around us. You mentioned that we're pressed for time. Is it worth the time to have a two-income family? Do I have to be living in a $250,000 house that has such huge payments that we both have to work? Are we looking at the fundamentals of why we're even here? What's the purpose of life then? And are kids a priority? The question would be, right? Are kids a priority or not?
And I would contend, as you said, I would contend that as a society moves further from God, that our value that we place on family falls accordingly, because if we deny God, if we don't believe in a God, and God is the one who actually created the family, established the family, really gave a workshop for exercising so many of his virtues, and so much character, patience and long suffering and love, that the family is that workshop. We defy God, we ignore God, we forget God, and what happens? We focus more on the self as opposed to others. So I think a major part of the problem in terms of how we view family has to do with how we view God.
Well, I want to dig in a little bit more. You mentioned how, in your view, maybe we don't value family as much as we did before. Would you say that most parents and grandparents would agree with you that they don't value family? Maybe give some more examples of how they may not, or the actions they take that don't value family as much.
Go ahead, Rich.
It's they value it, but are they looking through the right lens? The reason your mom and I have to work so many hours is for you kids. We want you kids to grow up with a better life, and that's why we're not home all day long, and that's why we're so tired at night to do anything with you is because we put so much value in you. We wouldn't be working this hard if we didn't love you. So it's kind of a warped sense of value. Mr. McNair mentioned our relationship with God. Our relationship with God, you look at God, and what has he done for us, and how does he look after us as our Father? And we have his book, his instruction manual, not just for our own personal edification, but how we're supposed to live life and get along with each other and take care of the children that he's given us.
I agree. I feel like we can say we value something, but you know, where the rubber meets the road, it's what we do, how we spend our money, how we spend our time, and let's face it, we can see from entertainment, from the materialistic forces that are part of us, that we put a whole lot more value in having more expensive, bigger, fancier, more impressive toys, and self-fulfillment than we do on loving and caring for the next generation. I think that that goes hand in hand with even the fact that I think I saw a statistic: almost 25% of children below the age of five are raised and worked with and managed by someone other than a parent. So let's say, as society, when a quarter of your children under five are not actually hands-on with a parent, that says something about society. And we can talk about all kinds of different reasons, but that is reality.
Definitely. Let's move on a little bit. You've talked about a number of the different challenges that are there for people who are grandparenting and parenting today. What are some of the important keys to being a successful grandparent or parent in society today, given these challenges? Mr. McNair?
The number one, okay. Go ahead. The number one priority has to be our relationship with God. If our relationship with God isn't right, everything else falls by the wayside. It's we look to God for the success of our parenting and grandparenting. My son and daughter turned out the way they did because of the grace of God. And my granddaughters can answer for how I'm being as a granddad when they get a little bit older. But boy, if you don't have a strong relationship with Jesus Christ and God our Father, everything else is it's a distant second. And in today's society, that's not something that's promoted. It's something that's demoted. It's looked down upon.
Well, maybe you could connect the dots for us just a little bit more. How does a close relationship with God, the Father, then begin to impact parenting and grandparenting? And feel free to mention, Ms. McNair.
Now we're able to prioritize things in a godly manner. How would God have it done? And as we're putting God's word to practice, that's teaching our children by example that God's way of life works, and that's what we're counting on to raise this family. And that's why I'm doing the things that I'm doing with my children, right? We base our decisions and our actions and our careers and our choices to have children based on God's word.
You know, as a follow-up to what you're saying, there's been a change in the last 3-4 decades, even in terms of fundamental philosophy towards child rearing, child raising children, caring for children, and the change has actually been very humanistic. In other words, the human is at the center of it. So, for example, what I'm saying is that it's a very child-centered, as opposed to taking how we work with our children and being guided by how we work with our children from what God says in His Word, where God tells us that we need to help them to grow in patience, in long-suffering, in love. Mm-hmm. So therefore, what we do is we train them to actually not punch their brother, but be patient with their brother. Well, humanism says, no, the self is the most important. So now with children, for example, we want to do what pleases them. And so therefore, look, if it feels good to punch your sister, look, that's just you expressing yourself. Now, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but that is a philosophy that mm-hmm. undergirds modern parenting. Mm-hmm. And in terms of, let's say, principles that can be worked with, as you mentioned, looking to God for His guidance, really, as opposed to this humanistic, child-centered approach, I think that's really a fundamental, important principle.
Mm-hmm. Well, off of that point, there's a gentleman named John Dewey who had a lot to do with our educational system. And his concept was to develop the personality of the child rather than the character of a child. Rather than develop obedience, rather than develop kindness and reliability and self-control, his whole concept was self-expression, mm-hmm. That if they're outgoing and extroverted, develop that. If they're funny, if they're energetic, develop that. And it seems to have taken hold because we're not really after promoting the character of the child that we're raising, mm-hmm. but we're after almost making them feel good just about themselves, and regardless what's happening in the world that surrounds them.
Well, that even drives what you were talking about before, about being able to cope with losing, mm-hmm. being able to cope with discomfort. Because if it's all about me as a child and my own happiness and my own sense of feeling good, then dealing with any discomfort or dealing with loss or dealing with having to be embarrassed, or having to do what I'm told when I don't like it. Those are all very uncomfortable feelings. Mm-hmm. And as you're saying, those then go by the wayside, as opposed to being something that can be experienced when you're young. So then when you do face challenges later in life, you're able to cope. So that's what you're saying.
That's our walk. That's our Christian walk. As we were counseled for baptism, we were told that we're picking a narrow path, a difficult way. God wasn't going to get rid of all the obstacles that we were going to face in our everyday life. Instead, God was going to use those obstacles to teach us lessons, to develop His holy, righteous character. And that's the same thing that parents would be guided to do with their children if we're going to raise them in a godly manner. to have that character developed, that when we do face opposition, when we do face rejection, when we do face difficulties, we don't turn and run. And especially, we don't call mom and dad the first time out. What we do is we use all our facilities and all the training that they've given us to now implement it and see how this works in our life.
So you're really talking about a philosophical difference in the way things are done today in God's way. Today, sure. The philosophy of raising children oftentimes is, okay, here you have a child, let's unpeel the onion and see what's inside, versus God's way seems to be guide them, mold them, fashion them, help them develop that character that then they can use to go forward in life.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Let me ask you a question that just came in, and this will take us a step back, but I think it's important. The question is, how does one determine what makes parenting, and I would add grandparenting, successful?
Mm-hmm.
Good question.
I think that, no, again, we can, this begs to get into specifics, understood, but really the measure of success, again, should not be the happiness of the child. You know, it shouldn't be the good feeling of the child, just like for us. Frankly, it's the same measure for us. Mm-hmm. It's not about us feeling good. It's about us measuring up to the character and the standards that God gives to us as our goal in his word. And so I don't know how you could separate it, frankly, from those characteristics that identify us as being good and upright. I think the same characteristics, let's face it, we read in the Proverbs, for example, a child is known by his actions, in paraphrase. So a child can be known as someone who is honest, as someone who is trustworthy. So a child can be known by those characteristics as well. That has to be, as in my estimation, there can't be a different standard. It has to be the same standard, certainly applied maybe in smaller, simpler ways, but the same standard for all of us.
So is it fair to say then maybe a measure of parenting and grandparenting success is the quality of character that a child has as they grow up and develop into an adult?
As reflected in their actions, their words, their conduct toward other people.
All right.
What is the report that what do the neighbors think of them? What is the report from their school teachers?
Reputation.
A measure of their character, like Mr. McNair said, their fruits, but their character. How do I measure a person's character? The same way I measure a child's character, it doesn't really vary that much when I measure an adult's character. We look for the same qualities, certainly, and both are in the developmental stages. None of us have it licked. We go forward and we expect our kids to move in the same direction that we're trying to move. We're trying to live, not just teach them God's word in an academic sense, but in an experiential sense, that they're doing the things that's expected. As we do things expected from our Holy Father, they do things that are expected from their physical father.
Okay. I might just quickly add that, you know, that does reflect their relationships with other people, too. I was watching a video classroom activity where the teacher was talking about the importance of classroom between children and how they relate to one another being largely based on the self-discipline that they learn and that parents teach them, as opposed to allowing them to do whatever they want, whatever makes them feel good. When a child is taught to control themselves, they get along better with other kids. And so one measure of character is the how we interact with other people in a way that brings positive, loving relationships or dysfunction, hatred, friction, and that does become a measure, frankly, also of our development.
And that's so important for later on in life. There's studies out there that say you could be technically savvy at the job that you're doing, but if you don't play well in a sandbox, you're not going to last. If you play well in a sandbox, you probably have longevity at that job that you're at. Mm. And to Mr. McNair's point, if they're not getting along with others as they're growing in their formative years, the likelihood of them playing well in a sandbox when they're adults, probably doesn't exist.
Let me come back to my question. What are some other things that parents, grandparents can do to be successful? And as we talk about that, let me read you a question from YouTube. This will sort of operationalize this question a little bit more. This is specific, but I think you can help. How can parents or grandparents overcome the potential barrier of coming from different perspectives religiously? So if you've got maybe one parent and another parent having different religious perspectives in raising a child, or maybe parents having a different religious perspective from grandparents, how do you overcome those barriers and still be successful in parenting and grandparenting?
I think there are so many ways that that grandparents, I'll use grandparents as a specific here, can reinforce and support their children and their raising of their kids that don't. Don't come into areas of, let's say for moral issues that have to do with them being in any way rebellious towards God. In other words, I think there's a lot of territory in which a grandparent can help and can reinforce that would not come into conflict before you get areas that there might be conflict. Mm-hmm. And I really think that the ability for a grandparent to support is so important for parents.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's exactly right. If we're going with the concept that these both parents have religious backgrounds, but they're not in agreement with one another, there's still moral values that are more or less universal. As a grandparent, can I interest my grandchild in reading? Absolutely. Can I help instill in them common courtesy? The appreciation for nature, of being a confidant even to the parents, and reinforcing the rules and regulations that the parents already have in their home. I'm not the one that sets the rules and regulations for my children or for their children, but I should be the one that's reinforcing them. So I could be of tremendous value as a grandparent to my grandchildren's parents or my kids by reinforcing the things that they already know that are more or less, I say universal, and I know that might be not exactly accurate, but the gist of it is there's some moral things that we could do as grandparents in helping children learn lessons, not just for today, but for as well as when they get into adulthood.
And I think that speaks to talking about grandparents and their ability or their mindset not to view themselves as being the fun one, where the parents are the bad guys. And I think grandparents can set themselves up in that way if they're not careful, I know your mother doesn't like you to eat ice cream, you know, let's say, for example, or eat, you know, a massive quantity of ice cream or something, but look, when you're with me, we can do this anyway. In other words, okay, maybe ice cream's not such a big deal, but what the message that is given is, I'm the fun one, we can do things differently, and it undermines what a parent might be trying to do.
Well, if I can interject just an example, growing up, I had two sets of grandparents, and they were intact marriages, which was really helpful to us growing up. But one of the sets of grandparents really tried to reinforce what my parents taught, and the other set of grandparents didn't want to be conflicting. And so they were wonderful grandparents. They were very relaxed, very loving, but we knew we could get away with them. Mm-hmm. Growing up, though, we actually had more respect for the ones that supported my mom and dad's teachings and were willing to reinforce their teachings. We had less respect for the ones who were sort of more laissez-faire and more fun, if you will.
Sure.
So it was just an interesting legacy that was left. We loved and respected both of them, but the ones that backed up mom and dad, there's a different level of respect for.
And I'll bet you that also that your parents appreciated that. I think as parents, parents really appreciate maybe more than maybe grandparents recognize, but they appreciate that support because it can seem like sometimes with kids it can seem like it's a never-ending battle. What do you say? When do you discipline? When do you not? It's a constant challenge. So to have someone else on your side as opposed to working against you, mm-hmm. That's deeply appreciated by parents, I think.
Definitely.
Oh yes, it's no different than Everybody comes over for a dinner, and you're left to clean up the mess after they leave. Mm-hmm. You leave your grandkids with their grandparents, and they come back home, and you're left to clean up the mess that the grandparents made. So it doesn't make for a welcoming scenario that the grandparents are that kind of attitude or that kind of etiquette that they're building in their grandkids. Wouldn't be really a welcome thing for them.
You know, another part of how grandparents can help and encourage and strengthen, I would say also, is in their willingness to give their kids, who are now raising their own children, so that maybe kids isn't really accurate, but give their adult children, well, that doesn't work either, does it? But whatever you want to call it, give them the room to fail, to struggle, to be not perfect. Because there was a time when they weren't perfect either. And so allow them to be able to step back a little bit and be more encouraging than critical. I think that can be very helpful.
Mm, oh, and that even translates out right into parenting their kids while they're kids. Just replay the tape. That's exactly what we should be doing with our kids. And so we can be practicing with our kids while they're still under our roof. And then when they have their kids, we'll continue to do the same thing. We allow them to fail, not being critical, but being encouraging, not being a naysayer, but pointing out positive and what are the life lessons that they can learn. And plus, it's a whole lot more fun when you're not the investment that you have is going to be limited because of the time that you have with your grandkids. You want to make the most of that time and leave them in capable hands again when you go, not in resentful hands.
Can you think of, along these lines, any scriptures, any Bible verses that sort of back up the idea of godly or parenting or grandparenting, or give us some more direction in godly parenting or grandparenting?
You know, the one that comes to mind so often for me is in Genesis chapter 18, where I believe it's verse 26, where God said of Abraham, he said, I have known him in order that he may command his children after him. In other words, God's design and desire was for Abraham to work with and train and encourage and make a priority his children and his children after them. So it's a godly value to actually desire to and be, I would say, excited, because it's not something that you jump up and down about every day, but that you enjoy, you take meaning and joy out of after working with your children and enjoy who they are. That is that's a God-given value. And so I think that God's command to Abraham was full of meaning in terms of establishing a legacy, but also in giving Abraham joy in his offspring.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's Moses was teaching the children of Israel as they were getting ready to go into the promised land. You're supposed to be, he didn't make it out to be a part-time job raising kids. He made it out to be a full-time job that rising up, sitting down, eating at the table together, going out, all of that is, you're looking for ways and avenues that God's word and God, the lessons that God has for us, could be exemplified, could be illustrated, could be lived out. And those are the things that really stick with a child as they're maturing in years.
Mm-hmm. We are starting to run out of time here, which is a little bit frustrating. We've got several other questions coming in from YouTube. And I'm sorry we won't be able to get to those today. It just makes me think we need to do another program on this topic and actually maybe use some of these questions as we go forward. As we wind down, what kind of ideas, what kind of final thoughts, takeaway messages would you like to leave with our audience today, gentlemen?
I guess it's my turn. Go ahead. Go ahead. Dr. Frost.
I'd say this, and we didn't touch on it too much, but I want to get this point out. Don't give up your responsibility. Don't give up the privilege of adulthood to your children. Growing up is easy, and it's not a lot of responsibility. The drawback of growing up, you shouldn't get to make all the choices. As an adult, we have the responsibility, and you could call it a burden, but it's levied against the privilege of having some autonomy. You get to make the decisions. It's interesting, you get into conversation with some adults, and they say, well, I can't listen to the podcast I want to listen to because the kids want to listen to their music in a car. I can't go out to dinner tonight because the kids have something to do on TV tonight. Sally has a sleepover. I can't go to that restaurant. The kids don't like that restaurant. Certainly the parents should involve the children in making their decisions, but the children shouldn't be running the house. The parents should. And when that conversation comes up and the children say, well, what about us? So you have something to look forward to. When you get older, you can make these decisions. But for right now, mom and dad want to do these things, and you follow along with us because we're in charge. We're the adults in this relationship, as opposed to, well, I want my kid to be my best friend. No, don't give up the responsibility of an adult or of a parent and put that on your children. They're not ready for that. They're not made for that yet. Let that time come when it's appropriate.
And they're going to learn through that process of learning to follow and respect decisions too, aren't they?
Absolutely.
I think I will add to that. I think that actually translates into how they treat other people as well. Because if they learn that they're not the center of the universe, that actually others need to be taken into consideration, that maybe this time, look, with this, we would like to go here. We'd like to do this. Next time, we'll do what you'd like to do. That translates into dealing with other people, because there are times when they're going to want to do something that impacts other people around them that aren't us negatively, and they will have been trained to think of others before themselves if we'll approach it, as you said.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is that your final thought, or do you have another
one? If we have time, I'll add just a thought. I guess my concluding thought was going to be that, you know, as parents, we are imperfect, and we look back, and it's a challenge that we all face, that we struggle with. Okay, so we're on the same boat, but I guess I feel like we shouldn't look at parenting as a matter of perfectionism, because in our society, you know, we listen to music and it's been mixed and remixed in a studio. Mm. So we listen to perfection. So when somebody plays a guitar and isn't perfect, we think, wow, that's not very good. But we're comparing it to perfection that we listen to on the radio or what have you. And in so many ways like that, we compare ourselves to airbrush perfection in so many ways. Mm-hmm. That I think that we can sometimes lose the joy of parenting and enjoying our children and savoring them, and sometimes goofing up and talking with them, saying, I know what, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that, said that. And we go on, and so take enjoyment out of what God has given, as opposed to looking at it as one more competition where we compare ourselves with our neighbors, with Facebook, what have you, and even with a standard that is not, honestly, a standard of perfection that we can't attain, that it's all about going in life and doing the best that we can and learning as we go along. So that's a bit of encouragement that I would add to the mix here.
So be willing to just enjoy the opportunity, the process while it lasts. And certainly we've got to be able to spend time with our kids or our grandkids to be able to enjoy the process. Because if we're not with them, we don't have that enjoyment opportunity.
Fair, true, right. True.
Gentlemen, thank you both for being on the program here with us today. Thank you for joining us from St. Louis. Dr. Franz,
thank you.
Glad you didn't wash away in the storms last night. Mr. McNair, welcome back, and thank you again for your time and your thoughts as well. God created the roles of parents and grandparents in order for children to be raised in the training and admonition of the Lord, as Deuteronomy talks about. Becoming a successful parent or grandparent is something God wants, and it's something our children and our grandchildren need. In our everyday busy lives, being an intentional or purposeful parent or grandparent is especially important. We have to be thinking, planning, intentionally carrying out efforts to train and educate and guide and love and encourage our children and grandchildren, as we've talked about today. Becoming an excellent parent or grandparent is something we can all achieve. But to do so, we must put in the time and effort to do so. And we must do it now, because children do grow up far too quickly. For more detailed insights into how to become excellent parents and grandparents, we encourage you to read our free booklet on Successful Parenting God's Way. You can order or download it free of charge at tomorrowsworld.org. And this booklet is very interesting. It's helpful. It's focused mostly on parents, but it's a transition that grandparents can make too. Many of these principles that are talking to parents can be used by grandparents as well. To find out some more solutions to today's pressing issues, be sure to join us each week here on TW Now. Next week, we plan to look into the death of the environment. You won't want to miss our program. Also, please, invite you to subscribe, like, or share today's program. Have a great week.